Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Live 100, I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and this evening we are dealing with beating Homeland Security and other law enforcement agencies. Our special guest will be Shirley Ann Stewart, a master electrician, and she has spent over 40 years breaking a set of rules, the one saying women are not qualified for her line of work. Founder of the SAS Electrical Services for 20 years, 8 years, Shirley has lectured for a non-traditional career for the Women's Center, the first woman to break the blue ceiling in the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 26. Also, Shirley had a stint acting career. An extensive acting career with Discovery Channel for a reality show called Garage Takeover as an electrician. Shirley also was an electrical instructor for Fairfax County Adult Education. Our other special guest will be Muhammad Rashid, 10-year sovereign practitioner in international amity constitutional law. The remedy regarding the financial collapse at law would be bankruptcy law and negotiable debt instruments. Trust law, including tort acts and ultra-virus. These are my guests, and they'll be here with me here this evening, and I want you all to give them your undivided attention. We have a little situation with Ms. Stewart, and she's going to explain what happened involving her and the Homeland Security people. So we want to make sure that we check this out. And after we get the gist of this information, then we're going to deal with questions that some of us may have in regards to what we're going to deal with here this evening. So I want you to pay very, very close attention to this broadcast. And the number to dial into the show is 310-982-4184. Okay? That's 310-982-4184. So if you have questions and comments later on in the broadcast, we will open up the lines so that you can get in and tell us what's on your mind. Okay? All right. Now, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back. So y'all sit tight, and we'll be coming right back.
When it comes to child support, many brothers and sisters just come to the conclusion that I'm just done. There is nothing I can do. They got me. Well, what we need to understand is this whole system is bogus, believe it or not. And for proof of that, why don't you send for my free articles? We'll also send one good audio clip and one good solid video clip to you. And by the time you listen to this and read this, you will clearly understand that there is a way out. You can send that to taraka53@hotmail.com. That's taraka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that right straight to you. Don't hesitate to visit my website, www.newdebtelimination.com. For information on us, go to www.newdebtelimination.net. Don't hesitate to call me, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's not over. It's just what you know. Living in a constant state of fear has never been good. Many of us fear the Internal Revenue Service. We don't know what to do about it. For one reason, we don't know what it is. Send for my free reports to taraka53@hotmail.com. That's taraka53@hotmail.com. We'll send our articles to you. We'll also send one good solid video that should do it once and for all about exercising your freedom of right to travel. And our second video shows you exactly what to do with your writ of habeas corpus, how to deal with these people in the courtroom, and what to send these people and how to respond to them. Send that to taraka53@hotmail.com, or you can call me, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't hesitate to visit our website, taraka53@hotmail.com. That's the email website, www.newdebtelimination.com.
Okay, we're back, Morris. Now, I currently have a situation, a little lawsuit going against some folks, and we're going to get into that also tonight. And I'm going to show you how I constructed the documentation that I'm going to go at these people with, and the strategy behind how it works. The administrative process can be very, very effective if you use it correctly. And I get a kick out of using it. I've had success after success after success because I make it impregnable and where it cannot be done away with. You have to face this thing straight up. There's no doubt about it. Now, we've all heard of Homeland Security. We've heard of the horror stories and how these people just pretty much treat people any kind of way they want to treat them. Just violation and violation of striking fear and intimidation of people. But one thing that I know for a fact, there are things that you can do. You can deal with these people. But you have to put the you-know-what in a sling. And that's what we're going to deal with here tonight. We're going to put this information out. We're going to have the sister lay out the story. We're going to deal with her background and all of this stuff here. And I'm glad you all are on this program tonight, because we're going to deal with some things here tonight. Okay? All right. For those of you in the chat room, y'all just hang tight. Let's rock and roll. Area code 703.
I got it all the way up.
Area code 703. You're on the air.
Hello. Can you hear it?
Hello. Yes, I hear you loud and clear.
Okay. Shirley Stewart and Muhammad Rashid.
Okay, well, fantastic. All right. Well, welcome to Morris Talk Live 100. And Shirley, you want to I read the information, but I want you to give us a little in-depth about your background before we go into this thing, and I'll get a chance to talk to Brother Rashid as well. Tell us about
you. Can you repeat that?
Give me some background information on you.
Okay. Yes. I'm a Washington D.C. native. Born in D.C. Washington D.C. And I graduated from Anacostia High School. And after high school, I decided to go into a trade or get into a trade to learn a trade, and my choice was to become an electrician. And from there, I got into the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Union, Local 26. And then from there, I ended up working at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. During that time, I was getting my license for electricians, and then I got my master's probably in the 80s. From there, I basically had already started a business, because once you get a license, you're pretty much in business. So I was already doing small side projects and doing that type of work in electrical. I've always been a person who believe if you don't stand for something, you fall for anything. And, you know, I never forget, I told my mother when I was 13 I wanted to become a Black Panther. So I pretty much had somewhat of an understanding that there was something going on in this world or country that, to me, just wasn't, you know, all connecting to that. And I started researching and you know, going on a different path of my lifestyle, of diet, spiritual and mental. And you know, that's my path of life now, which has been a blessing to me. Along that, I've also been in the battle on the battlefield of helping people and also helping myself as being a woman in a non-traditional trade. Dominated by males. So that's been a challenge for me since I was 18, because I started when I was 18 years old. And but I almost always say that, and out of due respect to the men, that it's the men who taught me the trade. I didn't learn from women. Men taught me this trade, and I had to take it and absorb it and learn it and do well at it. And I think I have done very well at becoming an electrician and now a master electrician. So out of all due respect, there's nothing I want men to misunderstand that this is a thing against man and woman. No, my trade was taught to me by a man. How's that for a minute?
Okay. One thing that we can do, we can relax and just loosen up and just relax a little bit. Let me find out about Brother Rashid.
Okay, here he is.
All right.
Okay, how you doing, Brother?
Brother Rashid.
Let me see, Tahaka, is that correct?
That's correct, brother. Tell me about you, man.
Yes, sir. Okay, I'm Muhammad Rashid, and I've been assisting Shirley with these difficulties for some years now, and so we've got ourselves in a very a wonderful position by taking the corporations that we're dealing with and placing them in the commercial default. Now, are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay. And basically, I'm 68 now, and at 12 years old, I had started playing the guitar, and it was a very unique story about playing the guitar, which was attributed to my mother for even purchasing it and teaching me, starting me out by teaching me. But at 12 years old, I always heard people say to me that I should be a lawyer or an attorney. And I would wonder why people say that, you know, and I never gave it a second thought.
Okay.
So as the years went by, without me noticing, it was a transition that after it happened, I realized after the fact that I was involved with something that was suggested to me at 12 years old. And so then at about 25, I became very, very much concerned about law, because I had some situations with the law, and I didn't like it at all. So I started seeking help. And so I found a brother, and he happened to be a Muslim, a PhD in international law. And so I told him I'm very, very much interested in learning law, and I'd like to learn every aspect of law. So he took me under his wing and began to start, you know, educating me. And so we looked at the law that the Creator sent Musa, which really triggered this whole thing and set the foundation, because when the revelation was revealed to Moses, that was a very clear high sign to us that we should really, really concentrate and focus in on law, you see. And so in doing so, I began to discover things that the average person wouldn't even imagine in terms of what we are actually dealing with and what we are supposed to be dealing with. So, and that statement within itself brings along what is known as the bifurcation of government. But never, needless to say, after having studied with him probably over the course of maybe 5 or 6 years, then I would go to the law library, University of Cincinnati Law Library, and just study. And I went. I didn't have no problem going into classes, and I wasn't actually registered with the University of Cincinnati, but I had enough drive to go there, sit in class, and even had the audacity to ask questions, you see. And so the law librarian, after having watched me for about maybe a year and a half, close to 2 years, he told me, he said, Rashid, do you realize that you are ahead of most of our first and second year students with your level of comprehension about the law? I mean, this is what he said to me. And I had a good friend of mine that was one of the top young lawyers in Cincinnati, and he had a sister that was a part of his son. I remember we went out to breakfast one early top of the day, and they were telling me that with the abilities that they seen in the motions and things that I filed for the attorney to assist me with, they were saying, well, look, why don't you go ahead and get a degree in law? Why don't you go and get a degree, an honorary degree? And for some reason, I never was concerned about the formal aspect of it. And now that I look back in retrospect through these 68 years, I'm glad that I didn't become associated with the Bar Association, because once people begin to understand and find out what the Bar Association actually is and what it has done to put us in the financial fiasco that we are in today, being a contributor partner with the international bankers to, or banksters, as I would like to say, to pull the wool over the people's eyes, and they have been doing it ever since 1917, when the War Powers Act came out of the closet. We have been under siege in what's known as a cause debendi, a private war against we the people, or unsuspecting people, have been deceived and tricked by different individuals of our government, which constituted people like Senator McFadden. Senator McFadden filed charges against the Federal Reserve Bank and the United States Treasury because of the terrible crimes that he realized that was being committed on the American people. The American people have been a subject of the greatest fraud, especially the mortgage fraud on people's homes, the greatest fraud. And so with what Shirley was subjected to, Ms. Williams, it was a travis of justice, and it was a miscarriage of justice, and it was a blatant violation of her rights. And it's a blatant violation of the people's rights if they do not try to understand these complex issues that are involved in what they think is legitimate law, which is not legitimate law. And in my conclusion, I just basically like to say, as far as my introduction, I mean, I probably got a little top heavy, and I apologize about that. But
no, that's okay.
I've been affectionately referred to as a doctor, you know, and I believe a doctor in regards to a PhD, it means more than just a physical doctor. I believe that the acronym should properly stand for proper human development. And I think when the individual gets that by doing due diligence, then that's the best education that you can get, when you don't leave a stone unturned and you don't make critical leaps to judgment by raising your ignorance to a level of wisdom. So in restraining myself to these restraints and refusing not to accept anything less than what I should have, which is the actual understanding, then it's important for me to understand civil law and statutory law, just so I can know it and understand what they are doing with it, which I don't appreciate, because in it is ambiguity and plausible talk and legalese language, which is very inappropriate and very deceptive to we the people, you see. And so, I'm dealing with antitrust law and bankruptcy law. And these are the major things that are presenting major, major problems for us. And as difficult as it may seem, the circumstances surrounding Ms. Williams, Ms. Stewart, I apologize, the circumstances around Ms. Shirley Stewart's case, it very much ties in with the trust laws and bankruptcy laws. And it is because of this scenario where she has been victimized and not being able to understand why she's victimized, and she certainly hasn't did anything that could warrant this type of violation by the Homeland Security Gang. And I meant that just like I said, the Homeland Security Gang. So that they act like a bunch of rogues and a bunch of thieves and a bunch of intolerable misfits. You see, I think it was James Madison, President James Madison, that said that it is not the right of the people to correct, it is not the right of the government to correct the people, but it is the right of the people to correct the government, because as Yick Wo recited in his case law, Yick Wo versus Hopkins, that even though sovereignty is delegated to the various agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains always with the people, because the government was established of the people, for the people, by the people. So the people represent the highest level of authority as far as the government is concerned. And then this is where we have been railroaded, because we have been led into a plausible form, an ambiguous form, and a legalese form and a deceptive form of understanding about law. And so now we have to re-educate ourselves, because we put too much confidence in people that we shouldn't have put that much confidence in. And Thomas Jefferson also spoke about giving the government too much authority and power, because then they think that they're large and in charge and they run the thing. But it's we the people. And I won't take it no further than that. And I hope I stayed enough to the point where I was able to get some of the mainframe of what I was supposed to be talking about, but if I didn't, I hope that you can, we can lead back into these areas of concern, so that we can, you know, have a clear understanding about what we're actually dealing with. So on that note, I'm gonna turn you back over to Ms. Stewart.
Okay. Thank you. Hello, Shirley.
Hello?
Okay. Now, what I want to know, Shirley, is I want you to start from the beginning and tell me what happened.
Okay. All right. What happened, I think, 2012, Dr. Muhammad and I was traveling to Woodbridge, Virginia, and we saw there was a exit. We were going to take the Dale Boulevard exit, to Woodbridge, Virginia, and there was a roadblock by the state trooper, Virginia state trooper.
Okay.
And they had the exit blocked off, and two of their cars were blocking the exit where people couldn't continue on off the exit. So it was a long line, and cars started pulling over to the side of the side of the road. And when we pulled over, or when I pulled over, I was traveling. When I pulled over, one of the state troopers jumped out of his car and walked up to me and said, "Can I see your driver's license and registration?" At that point in time, I had a Moorish ID travel card, but I still also had I was still on the plantation. I still had the state driver's license. And I didn't give him the state driver's license. I gave him the Moorish travel card, and he accepted it. Basically, he didn't give us no problem. But he still gave me a ticket. The ticket was for passing on the right. And I hadn't passed on the right, because if I was passing on the right, then I would have went on past them. Right, and they had it all blocked off. And then I even did some further research with the Virginia Code on tickets, and that particular ticket he gave me is not even valid. So
okay.
Also I signed – go ahead.
I'm listening. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, so I also signed the ticket UCC 3-108, Reservation of All Rights. And I didn't put my signature. I signed it just like that on their ticket. So they had set a date for me to come to court, but the date on the ticket, after I realized, was on a weekend. If I'm not mistaken, it was on a weekend. He had made a mistake. But anyway, I didn't go to court. And next thing I know, they had sent me the ticket saying that I had to pay the ticket, and I had so many days to pay the ticket or they were going to suspend my license. And we responded to the Virginia State Troopers immediately with a commercial affidavit complaint. And they had also submitted a copy into the records of the courts as well. And they told and a constructive notice, into the records of the court. And they did not respond, the Virginia State Trooper Chief. So what they ended up doing was suspending my license. And from that, that turned into a concerted act of them now violating my rights. And the Prince William County, which was the judiciary of the court that I was dealing with, they ended up arresting me and also continued to violate my rights as well. So I appealed it to the Circuit Court here in Virginia, and also. For the record, each time I went to court at Prince William County Court, I had a witness with me, and I also had the judges, they tried to say, or they kept saying that I failed to appear, because when I would get up and they would call my name, I would stand up and, you know, as a flesh and blood woman, not as the ceremonious homo.
Okay.
So this went on, and just to kind of fast speed just a little bit on that.
We're not
that,
in a hurry. Take your time.
Okay.
We're not in a hurry.
After that, so now my license is suspended. I got traffic tickets to pay. Remember, I still had the Moorish Travel Right to Travel card, which they didn't make that an issue when they pulled us over. But then I'm being harassed and stopped in jail. So one day I was going to the library in Arlington County. This is Arlington County, Virginia, and I was going to George Mason Library to do some research on the case in Prince William County, what I was dealing with. And I was coming back, it was like 10:30 at night, and I was driving on 66 East, West, I'm sorry, coming back home in Herndon, Virginia, where I live. And all of a sudden, Arlington County officer pulled, well, of course, you know, they put their flashes on and pulled me over. And she comes up to my car, and I had my cell phone, smartphone, and I just cracked the window a little bit. And she said, "Can I see your registered license and registration?" I said, "Why are you pulling me over?" She said, "Because you're tagged." I said, "Ma'am, there's nothing wrong with my tag." So I would never let the window all the way down. I cracked it just, well, I had it cracked enough to a point. So I said, "Ma'am, I'm gonna if you don't leave me alone, I'm gonna call the police on you," something like that. I can't remember. So when I said that, she grabbed me out of the car. I mean, she physically grabbed me like somebody's grabbing you and with a balled up fist and pulled me out of the car. And my phone went everywhere. But the good thing, it was all being recorded. Because when I called, I was able to call 911, and they had the incident of what had happened that night. So what happened when that happened? About five of them pulled up. Five more officers come up, male and female, in different cars. And I mean, they were harassing me and telling me, you know, you going to jail. And they searched my car, and I told them, "You cannot, I do not give you consent to search my car. I do not give you consent to put your hands on me." I mean, they was like totally patting me down, and even a male was patting me down, going in my pocket. They took me in and locked me up that night, and then they released me like 5 o'clock and towed my car, by the way, released me around 5 o'clock in the morning onto the street. At 5 o'clock in the morning, and I had to walk in the dark to, I can't even remember where I walked at this point, but I had to walk to get to a cab, but it was a long walk to get to from where they drop you off, put you off in the street until you go find your way to get home. So so that's Arlington County. So what I'm getting to is that that's from Prince William County, Arlington County, then here comes Fairfax County, which I live in Fairfax, but I've always had problems in Fairfax County. I mean, I had an incident where my tenant, which I have a tenant in my home, we live in a housing community, residential community, and I live on a cul-de-sac, and the police, Fairfax County, going to come into the neighborhood now, into the neighborhood, and put tickets on my car and his car. It's not that many people of color that live in this neighborhood. And so the tenant, when he brought it to my attention, well, I brought it to his attention that you got a ticket on your car, and I told him, "Well, you can go to court, but I'm gonna challenge it." So he went to court and they threw it out. Okay. I challenged it, and this is what the ticket was, this is what they put on the ticket. Said that we wasn't parked close enough to the curb. I couldn't believe it. Now, I've been living in this neighborhood since 1984. I have never, ever seen nothing like that before. By the way, that just happened, what, 2012, 2013, when that incident happened. So Fairfax County has – okay, go ahead, Scott.
No. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Okay. So Fairfax County has been a real big problem, and they are known for their corruption and violating people's rights. I mean, it's a group here called Citizen Coalition for Police Accountability. I'm also a part of that, and that's a people of all walks of life is involved in that. Fairfax County has a terrible record of violations of people's human rights, and so to speed it up a little bit, Fairfax County. Fairfax County, on September the 19th, I'm a contractor. My brother and another person, we were on our way to Virginia, Richmond, not Richmond, but in Virginia, looking at a project. My company was there to be awarded a nice little project, nice project, which we definitely needed that. Okay, so as we were coming out, this was in Woodbridge, by the way, too, off of Route 1, we were coming from the construction site, fenced-in site, and all of a sudden, as I was traveling, coming out of the site, off the site or whatever, and all of a sudden, Fairfax County Sheriff or Deputy flies past me in a high rate of, it was so, he was going so fast that, I mean, really, we probably could have had a collision. And not only that, I really believe, and I can prove it too, because I went back and took pictures and clocked the whole scene, that he was sitting there waiting for us to come out of it. So we were being followed. So as I finally got out, after he drove past at a high rate of speed, he went up the road, made a right, and I had to go the same way because I was turning around to get back on 95 North coming back to Tyson's Corner. When I got back on the exit of 95 North going back to Tyson's Corner, here he comes with flashing lights. So I told my brother, here's the same deputy behind us again. Oh, you know, well, he was behind it in the first time, wasn't he? Okay, so I just pulled over. He gets out the car, says, so I said, well, what's the problem? He said, your tag. There wasn't nothing wrong with my tag. He said the sticker on my tag was dead. It was not dead. Then see, what they do is that they have to come up with a reason to stop you. Well, that was an unjust reason to stop me. And then what they try to do is then when they have this unjust reason to stop you, here they go. Can I see your driver's license and registration? Okay. Well, at that point in time, I was traveling. Okay? I was traveling, okay, minding my own business, and I had a right to be traveling, minding my own business. And when I gave him my IDs and credentials, he didn't want to accept it. So he had me. And why is because I – okay, they weren't the conventional license. It was my own traveling right to travel driving license, driving to travel. Okay.
Okay.
So anyway, this went on. I mean, this went on back and forth. He said, "Mr. Stewart, step out of the car." I step out of the car, and then he goes to ask me about this organization called Divine Providence, which. I'm not going to get into that too much, but Divine Providence is an organization, like many organizations out here. We got the skinheads, we got the Ku Klux Klan, so what's the problem here? Okay. And we not radical. Okay. We for peace and love and you know, and happiness, really. So he went to say that the documents that I had was fake. Was not real. Was forged, not forged, but he said that they were not real. He said they were something that was from the internet. He continued to say that the documents or the IDs that I had was not real. He said that they were fake, fictitious. That's the word they used. So anyway, they asked me to get out the car again. I get out the car again, and then they said, Ms. Stewart, you're under arrest. Next thing I know, I'm locked, I'm handcuffed, okay, and put into the deputy's car who pulled me over. And by the way, two more came. You know they always got to have a backup, so two more came after that. Okay, so then he put me in his cruiser, and, of course, I was handcuffed. Now, I don't know what was really going on with my brother and the officers at that point in time, but what I was told by my brother was that they even patted him down. They didn't pat the other person down. So, you know, I'm not sure. But they didn't tow the car away. My brother was able to take the car home. So now I'm taken to before the magistrate, and they have these documents. Everything is legit. They had no case against me. And yet they told me that I had to stay overnight and go before a judge the next day. So the next day came, of course, you know, I was in a sale, okay, overnight. So the next day, and by the way, just so you know, I've always asked for my counselor. I've always asked, well, my family knew where I was at because my brother was with me, but I always asked them, I need to call my counselor. And it just seemed like they don't even want to hear it. You know, I never could understand when you say, I need to call my counselor, these people just keep on like they don't even see you. They're very disrespectful. So I end up being locked up overnight. The next day, now this was really, I never seen that like this. The next day, I go out before, they take me to a room, and not just me, it was many other people in there, a room, a judge on a video, Judge Waters, on a video. So when they call my name, I go up to the podium, and the judge goes, no bond. And I'm saying, wait a minute, to myself, I say, what did I haven't even said anything. He didn't even give me a chance to say anything, no bond. They took me back, and I stayed in jail for 7 days. Now, this happened on September the 19th. I got out on September the 29th. And they had me in jail for, the charges was fictitious IDs, driver's license, suspended driver's license. So they said all these documents that I had was all fictitious. Okay? So then I get out of jail. By the way, I had to get out on a $1,500 bond. I had to end up getting a, well, first I got out, tried to get out on my own personal recognizance. Judge Cassidy didn't want to, he didn't let that go. To keep me in there longer, I had to end up getting a bar card attorney and then got out on the bond for $1,500. Okay, that's on the 29th I get out. Okay. Then on, I'm home now. I'm still recuperating from all the mess that I've been dealing with, period, from last year. It's a concerted act against war on Shirley Ann Stewart. So on October the 8th, it's dark. Everybody know October the 8th is dark in this area, the East Coast. And I heard a loud explosion. So I live near Dulles Airport. So I just thought it was something going on there. But I still got up. I was on the second floor in my bedroom, and I walked out into the hallway, and I heard somebody say, put your hands up against the wall, put your hands up against the wall. And I looked, I couldn't believe what was going on. I looked, and all I can see was armed men with deadly assault weapons pointing at me down on the, and they were on their knees like, because I'm on the second level, and it's like they're on their knees with these rifles pointing at me. So I just stood there. And a lot of people say, thank God you did, because they probably would have took you out if you would have just twitched. And then they ran upstairs and grabbed me. I'm like, what is going on? And what got me, I'm going to have to say, I didn't even know these people was in my house. They were in his unannounced, didn't ring a doorbell, didn't knock on the door. And the explosion was, the joke was on me because the explosion was my door. And I didn't even know.
Well, let me ask you something now. Let me ask you something. Okay. My understanding is that you had gotten out of jail, you had bonded out of jail, but then all of a sudden these people came in, kick your door in. So undoubtedly they had a warrant with a break order on it. And did they show you that?
You're saying on October 8th, obviously they had a warrant. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Tanaka.
Yeah. Did they present you with a warrant with a break order on it?
Let me just clear this up. First of all, they dismissed the charges against me. All charges, even Fairfax County charges, was dismissed.
And this is after they kick your door in?
Yeah, the case has been dismissed. All the Homeland gang, when that was dismissed less than 30 days after they had this preemptive strike against me. Because they didn't have a case, and they still don't have a case. Fairfax County.
Well, let me ask you this, Shirley. Now, when they kick your door in, did they show you a warrant?
Okay. When the Homeland Gang, they ask you a question, no. Because if you recall what I said, I came out of my bedroom, and all I can hear is, put your hands up against the wall, put your hands up against the wall. When they came up the steps and brought me down and handcuffed me to the chair, my dining room chair, they still didn't show me anything. I didn't even know who these people was. I didn't even know they was in my house. Remember that. I didn't find out about a warrant until 30 to 45 minutes later when Jason Manick comes through the door. By the way, it was 20 to 30 of them in my house. 20 to 30 agents, armed, deadly weapon, armed officers in my house, rolling through my house, putting notes on the door, A, B, C. And high-tech weapons. And they was pointing, when they had me sitting in the dining room, after they brought me down, said they had the weapon pointing at my head. By the way, I had a tenant in the basement. They went and drug him out, handcuffed him, put him on the sofa, and had the armed agents pointing the high-tech deadly weapons at his head as well. So we sitting there handcuffed, and honestly, we didn't even know what was going on. And that's the truth. When that agent showed up 30 to 45 minutes later, he said, he had some papers in his hand. Now, I'm handcuffed. He said, I have a warrant for your arrest for impersonating as a foreign diplomat to defraud the government. I'm like, okay. And I have a warrant to search your house. I said, can I see it? Well, they wouldn't let me do anything. Plus, I wasn't free because I'm handcuffed. And they continue to ramshack my house, in my tenant space, okay, and they took my computer, they took my money, they took my documents, and I had run my business out of my home. They went through every room. They even went in the attic. Just to...
Wow.
Yeah.
Hold on a minute. Take a breather. For just one moment, we're just going to take a little quick breather, and then we're going to take off.
I walk outside my bedroom door, and I hear someone go, put your hands up against the wall, put your hands up against the wall. And I'm like, you know, I'm in a state of shock. And I put my hands up against the wall, and I can look downstairs. I'm on the second level of my home. And I looked down, and all I saw was fully dressed, armed agents with deadly assault weapons pointing at me.
And she had the audacity to defend her rights and fight for the preservation of her rights, and knowing that if she give up one, she give up all, and stood her ground, then they made her pay a price for it. And the only reason why she is suffering today is, I guess, the only reason why Jesus suffered. Just trying to do the right thing.
We have an agenda. We brought it all up and chicken at you this Saturday morning, 10 a.m., WJRM 1390 a.m., and WJRM.com from anywhere on the planet.
Okay, Shirley. Now, so 45 minutes later, this man shows up with some papers, and you ask to see the warrant, and you were never shown the warrant. Did you request a copy of the warrant?
Did I request a copy of the warrant?
Yes.
Yes, I did. No, I finally got a copy of the warrant later. But I definitely didn't have a copy of the warrants when they had me handcuffed from, and it was not a valid Fourth Amendment warrant from the get-go. And I must say, now,
the warrant that you did see, did it have a judge's signature on it and him giving orders to break into the premises?
Yeah, it was a magistrate's signature. Ivan Davis had given them the orders to do what they did.
Is he a judge?
Was illegal. I got a copy of it.
Okay. All right. Now go ahead. Finish your. I'm listening.
Brother, I just want to intercept just for a moment. I'm going to turn it back over to Ms. Stewart. But I just want to say that if a judge had signed off on that, the judge would have been in dire trouble, dire straits at this particular point, because there was no sufficient cause or anything to make that a legitimate fourth degree warrant. And under a legitimate Fourth Amendment warrant, you have to specify what you're coming in there for. You cannot come in there and make a random search and just pick everything that you think is good for evidence. No, you have to have a select criteria, a list of what you're coming in. It has to be clear. It can't be muddled. This was so muddled, it was so far in the wrong until law is basically of two natures, a universal nature and a specific nature. In order to gain a conviction and gain shock of conscience, you have to have law of specific nature. You can't be generalizing like they did and damage a business the way that they did, slander her the way that they did, defamation of character, and then holding her under tort circumstances and colorable acts under conspiracy and fraud. And fraud is the main foundation of what was taking place. Fraud, then conspiracy, and then colorable acts, tort acts. These acts are things that make the legal system accomplish perverse ends which the system of law was not designed to accomplish. And then they add to it the ultra vires of these various corporations, whether they enforcement corporations or not. They all have ultra vires, and they have a nul-till charter. They are nul-till corporations because all of the corporations' charters are defective, and I won't go into that right now, but I'll turn you back over to Ms. Stewart, and you can question me about it later if you like, and I'll explain.
One more thing one more thing I want to add is that in my neighborhood, we have a newsletter that comes out every month called Kingston Chase, and the neighborhood watch did a story. I want to read to you what they said.
Okay.
At approximately 6 a.m. on Tuesday, October 8th, law enforcement executed a warrant at a residence at the intersection of Society Court and Society Drive. This included the use of flashbangs, grenades, and aerial support, which startled the neighbors. Additional information indicated the warrant was related to an individual who was illegally impersonating a diplomat. And that's one, and then they did another story, an explosion in Kingston Chase neighborhood.
And I'd like to also add that this is a very, very refined neighborhood, upscale neighborhood. We're not talking about no degenerate neighborhood. We're talking about an upscale neighborhood. We're talking about top-class people. And the reason why these charges had to be dismissed because there's no way they could possibly sustain it. And so, therefore, now the question in the minds of the people should be, why was this provocation necessary in the first place? And that's where we get down to the nuts and bolts of what's really going on. So here's Ms. Stewart. That's food for thought.
Right. So, Taco, you want to pick up from there?
I want to find out what happened next. After you, because they took you down, they incarcerated you again, and you went to court, they dismissed the charges. So since then, what has taken place?
When the marshals or the agents took me, put me in there, when they took me out of my house, it was about 8 8 o'clock, 8:30. The tenant was still here in the house, and the agents still in my house. We're talking 20 to 30 agents still in my house, and they're taking me out handcuffed, shackled on the ankles, and handcuffed in the back of the on the hands. They took me out onto my front lawn and out to the front, and they had deadly assault weapons, armed agents standing in rows. I think it was five rows. I mean, like, this was war. It looked like the military war going on Shirley Ann Stewart. They put me in their cruiser and took me over to the federal Eastern District Court in Alexandria, Virginia, where the marshals took me and locked me up and put me in a cell and told me I had to go before the magistrate, Ivan Davis, the one who gave them the warrant to come in and invade my privacy. Okay, so I had to go before him at 3 o'clock. So I'm sitting in there from 8 to 3, and when they came and got me and continue in shackles, and I always asked, even when I was at my house, can I call my counsel? Can I call my family? Because you all are kidnapping me. Nobody knows what's going on except for the tenant, and he definitely didn't know what was going on. But the point is, when I was in the cell at 3 o'clock, or maybe before, a little before, they came and got me, took me up to a courtroom, and there I walked out into the courtroom. This is what the judge, Ivan Davis, said. Oh, Miss Stewart, you're here on a traffic ticket. So my mind just totally went blank. I said, y'all didn't, and this is not me talking out to them. I'm thinking in my head, they didn't did all this to me for a traffic ticket. And then this prosecutor gets up and starts reading, impersonating the foreign diplomat to defraud the government. So I'm like, what is going on? He started reading all these charges, blah, 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 the complaint and all this. So after that, the judge goes, process her out of my court. And then they took me out. And then I ended up being processed out of their court. And I didn't get out of there until 5 o'clock, and I had to call my family at that point in time. That was my first time calling anybody, and that was like, the court was closing up when they were releasing me. And just to put this out there, the government was shut down when all this was going on. The federal government was shut down. If everybody can recall that, the government was shut down for, 2 or 3 weeks? So I was in all this mess with the shutdown.
Okay. Now, have you recorded all of the things that has happened to you from start to finish?
Say that again.
Open to this. Have you recorded everything that has happened to you from beginning to up until now? Have you wrote it
everything
down?
Everything is documented. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. We'll go ahead on.
I got more than you think.
So has anything else happened?
I'm sorry, Mr. Hodges.
So has anything else happened?
I'm going to let my legal counsel take it from there.
Okay. Let me ask you something, Mr. Tahaka,
basically, what it is now, it's a filibustering going on now. Recently, they sent a letter and asking her if she would promise not to, you know, come after them legally, that they would return her money and all of her belongings back to her. And so naturally, I wouldn't let her ascribe to nothing like that, because it's too much damages that's involved now. When one of your rights are violated, it's like all of your rights are violated, because this is a flagship issue. And if you understand constitutional law, we know that this is a flagship issue. And if we understand the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution, which mandates that the United States Constitution for the Republic of America is the supreme law of the land, though expressly written into every state law, and judges in every state are bound thereby, and anything to the contrary is with no standing, has no legal standing. So therefore, what are these statutory laws and these prima facie laws that we are dealing with? These corporate laws, these laws are not credible like statutes at large or constitutional law. These corporate laws, these prima facie laws, are only good until they have been overcome by a verifiable evidence. And so these prima facie laws were never meant for us. That's the reason why in the 11th Amendment of the Constitution for the United States of America, it makes it clear that no corporate entity can come and prosecute a flesh and blood male or female that supports the Constitution for the Republic of the United States of America. So it makes it a sin, it makes it a crime when they do these things, because now this forces us to go into what is known as like the bifurcation of government. Now, the bifurcation of government is such a serious concern until Congress mandated that when the political question doctrine is raised, then the case should be dismissed in favor of the one that's bringing that to bear, which would be, of course, the plaintiff, because these people are not going to tell on themselves. So when the plaintiff raises that political question doctrine like that, it has to be dismissed with prejudice in his favor. Thing of it is that most of the people don't even understand what is even going on. They do not even have a clue about what is going on. And basically with Homeland Security needed a big fish to fry because the economy is not in the best of shape. So they need to justify some way of attacking the trust of Shirley and Stewart, Miss Shirley and Stewart. Now, why do they want to attack the trust? The reason why they need to attack the trust, because all corporations are debtors. I wouldn't care if they said that they got $1 trillion and another $20 trillion coming next week. They're debtors. And the reason why they're debtors is because they're dealing with fiat funds. We're not dealing with silver or gold, and the Bland-Allison Act was suspended in 1933 because the gold was ripped off by the international banksters who was dominated mainly by 99% by the Zionist Jews. And this is an absolute fact. And so the thing of it is that this cover-up was necessary in order for the banksters not to be realized and seen as they really, really were. So there was a lot of filibustering going on that affected the Congress, because the Congress was forced to do business with these people because these people financed both sides of the war in World War One and World War Two. And the only reason why we get caught up in this mumbo-jumbo and cannot find which way is in and which way is out, which way is up or which way is down, is because we're not taking the time to do due diligence on any of these issues. When people hear issues like this, this is a good opportunity for them to call in, ask questions, and see if they can work to get some type of conscious awareness of what's actually taking place, because truly what we are dealing with in absolute reality is the matrix being pulled over the people's eyes, and they are taking the matrix as the real deal when it's not. So in the symbolic language of the picture of the matrix, most of the people, the majority of the people, have taken the blue pill instead of the red pill. Now, I don't advocate no pills, so symbolically speaking, I'm presenting this way. If there had to be a symbolic pill to take in order to stay connected with reality, it should have been the red pill. Now, the reason why blue is not acceptable, because symbolically, the secret societies and the satanic societies know that blue is an untrue color. That's the reason why they call Blue Monday a Blue Monday, because that was the untrue people being marched out of the Holy Land because of their foulness and because of their corruption, and they was marched across the Sahara Desert into the hills and cave sides of Europe. And I guess I need not say any more, because the only people that could have marched them was the fathers of civilization. So, but the bottom line is that we're dealing with something much, much bigger than meets the eye. And when the people understand all of the secret groups who have esoterical knowledge of what I'm speaking of, but they don't want the people to be educated in how to overcome and deal with this effectively, until the people are able to be effective and understand the critical issues between the bifurcation of government. And it all starts with the rights that were ceded to the original colonies of the Constitution, and it also started with the power that was ceded to the federal government. And when you look at the Declaration of Independence, under the second article of the Declaration of Independence, you'll see that the power and the full supreme power that was given to the original colonies, that was a part of the that original compact, those rights was not ceded to the Washington those rights was not ceded to Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, or its colonies, or its territory. They did not have the full rights, even though it appears that they have the full right. They do not have the full right, and they are subordinated to the laws of any state. That's the reason why we have the Erie Doctrine, which makes it clear that the only authority that the federal government is allowed by the state is anything that the states haven't ruled on, and if the states rule on it, it supersedes anything that the federal government does, even though people do not realize that, and they may question it, but they can question it all they want, because the Constitution has never been declared null and void, and it never will be declared null and void. And so, as I said before, the Constitution is the supreme law of this land, to the same extent, though expressly written into every state law, and judges in every state are bound thereby. And all of these other forums that we've been dealing with are inferior forums, meaning that they are administrative forums, and they're not practicing law. Law is just only a dog and pony show. They're not actually practicing law. And so these are things and concerns that people should have, and if people are listening, they should call in and ask questions. Well, could you explain? Could you make this point a little clearer? Because I know there's probably some substance to what you're saying, but at this point it's very vague because it's so overwhelming, and it's so we need incrementally to be educated so that we can see the ins and outs of this thing. And I can understand that and appreciate that. But basically, I just want to just put this information out there, because if people think that they are dealing with law when they go into these courtrooms, they're going to get bamboozled every time. And Malcolm had enough sense to know that the people have been bamboozled, and I mean bamboozled. So it's not what you think it is. So if you do not know anything about your trust, if you do not know anything about bankruptcy law, if you don't know anything about negotiable debt instruments, believe me, you done swallowed probably a bottle of the blue pills. So at this juncture, I'm going to, and then another thing, Shirley, just remind me, Mr. Lloyd, remind me of, to let you know that we have a Homeland Security gang in default, and all of the political subdivisions that were a part of that preempted strike in a concerted effort to violate the rights of a flesh and blood sovereign woman, being now that they have to answer to this default, and they cannot escape it, they cannot get around it, they cannot remove it. You see, so and thanks to the Most High, we have these people in that position, and it's nothing that can do at this point. you see. And their time for the type of foolishness that they are perpetrating upon the people is up, because the Creator is allowing this knowledge to flow to the people so the people have a clear understanding about what happens and what needs to happen and how we have to be disciplined. Because if we do not know and recognize our remedies, then we have no rights. The only time we have rights is when we know and recognize our rights. And when we know all rights emanate from we, the people, then we start taking responsibility for ourselves, re-educating ourselves, and doing due diligence on all of these things, and quit raising our ignorance to a level of wisdom. That, I mean, actually do due diligence, understand what we're dealing with, understand the procedural process that these inferior courts are using, so that when we tell them that operating under the rebuttable presumption that your statutes and your laws operate, apply, or affect me is a nullity upon its face. On the roll call and on the books, it is a nullity. It is a worst type of fraud that can be perpetrated upon the people. They have no jurisdiction. They have no subject matter jurisdiction. They have no personum jurisdiction. And they have no venue jurisdiction in terms of the flesh and blood woman. And it is a direct, obvious correlation that exists between Shirley Ann Stewart or anybody as far as their cap and low case appellation of their name is concerned, and the all cap appellation. And the courts and any political enforcement agent of the political subdivision, when they send anything to the entity, the corporate entity, they always send it in the all-cap name. They never send it in cap and lowercase because they can't. And if you look in the corpus juris secundum, then you begin to understand clearly what is taking place, because it explains to you about the corpus entity, which represents the trust in relationship to the flesh and blood, man and woman. So it's a great big difference there, and if people don't understand it, then what happens is that they allow themselves to be latched into artificial jurisdiction, not knowing their rights. And if you don't know your rights, you don't know how to protect your rights, so you're automatically latched into a inferior jurisdiction, and then there you are. So in order for us to escape this recidivism, then we have to become educated. We have to really know exactly what we're doing. We can't be like Talk Charlie the Tuna, looking good and smelling good, but you don't taste good. So scientists say, we can't deal with you, Charlie the Tuna, because you look good. You're the sharpest tuna out there. You got the baddest glasses, you know. But you don't taste good. We need tuna that tastes good. So we people, we want to look like we people of substance, but we don't have no real substance because we're selling our physical, mental, and spiritual assets for these frivolous gadgets of this world, when it is our physical, mental, and spiritual development that is going to give us the ability to truly overcome and give us the staying power that we need to maintain and the affiliation of the noble reality of our Creator and the Malaikas to help and protect us in every sense of the word. And until we get back into that level of consciousness and really understand what we are and who we are, then we are subjected to the inferiority mentality of these people who are lovers of flesh and lovers of wealth, you see. And these are misplaced desires that are taken out of context, and this is what is used to cripple and weaken and blind the people, these artificial devices. And so in my conclusion at this point, I'd just like to say that the first of the occult sciences that was used to divide the man and woman was that, the master division between the man and the woman. And you do that by reversing the roles. You know, put the elements of masculinity in a woman's mind and the elements of femininity in a man's mind, and reverse their order, even though they don't know it, it's reversed, because if you acknowledge and be and sign off on something like you if you sign off on something that is incorrect, permeated yourself with something that is working against your betterment. So we can't just sign off on things and endorse things and give our support to things unless they are absolutely right. Because if we do this unconsciously, it's going to work against us. So we have to be very careful of what we do and how we do it and make sure that we're doing everything in the best way. This is the reason why people in these days now are working to achieve good diets, working to achieve good mental competency, and working to achieve spiritual clarity. So I hope I haven't stretched this thing out too far, but here's Ms. Stewart just for a moment.
No, you did a wonderful job, brother. But I have something to run past you that happened Friday, and after I'm done, I want to get your opinion on it. And ladies and gentlemen, those of you who listen to the broadcast, we are going to open up the lines within the last hour of this broadcast. So if you have a question to our guests, if you have a question or if you need some assistance with something, call in, and the brother can assist you. But if you have a question, this is for a question that you have some for assistance, then you can call in and we can answer that in the last hour. But now, brother, this is what happened the other day, and this is a real life story, and this occurred Friday morning, July the 11th. A man walked into the airport here down in the south, and he had previously purchased the ticket online the day before to fly from a city located here in Florida to one located in Texas. And he presented the baggage clerk with his a world passport that had his name spelled in upper and lowercase letters. And they printed out the ticket, they took his bag, and they gave him a receipt for the ticket, and they gave a boarding pass for the ticket, and gave him a receipt attached to the bag, and informed him to go through the security checkpoint. Now, when he got to the security checkpoint, he gave them the ticket, and he gave them the passport to make sure that the name on the passport is the same name as on the ticket. However, the people at the checkpoint said, well, this ID is not a state-issued ID. We can't, this is not good. I'm going to have to have my supervisor look at it. So they gave it to the supervisor. Supervisor came back and said, we can't allow you onto the plane with this. This is not a state-issued ID. And then the guy asked him, can I speak to your supervisor? And so he got his supervisor. His supervisor came out and said, same thing. We can't allow you to board the flight with this ID, and this is not a state-issued ID. So the guy got his identification, but he recorded the names of the people that interfered with his freedom of right to travel, which was three men. He got their names. And he turned around, and he walked away, and as he began to walk away, he began to accumulate witnesses to exactly what happened. And he got on through the airport, and he got some more witnesses, and then he left the airport. But now what this man did was, when he got home, he drew up an affidavit. He listed the entire story, and after he listed the entire story, he began to go into the points of his freedom of right to travel and the violation of his human rights based on the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. He took it out and highlighted the points, the articles that were violated, and he put that on the side. He made copies of the identification that he used, a copy of the ticket that he used, and a copy of the receipt for the baggage that was granted. And he went on, and he got up to about 14 points of violations, and then he attached a copy of the Declaration of Human Rights to that affidavit, and he took it with the marker where he highlighted the violation that he listed inside the affidavit. And then he got an article from the agency, which was the Transportation Security Administration, which is a branch of Homeland Security. And he brought out the article clearly showing from their own website a case involving the same thing, that they had laws and step-by-step denials for the case that was issued by the court involving the same thing. And then he went on to add what's called a blast letter, and that he informed them in the affidavit that he was reserving the right to have this situation forwarded to the blast letter. Now, the blast letter contains every major newspaper and magazine news broadcasts, including 60 Minutes and talk shows and everything else, the name of them and the city, state, and zip code, and that was also attached to it, to this initial affidavit. And these people have 14 days to respond. He also put in protection for the notary. He also put in case law, and he also added all the ins and outs about freedom of right to travel, whether it's on road, whether it's in the air, and he put it in a nice, neat package, and he's sending that to the director of the Transportation Security Administration, which is John S. Pistol, and he's got to rebut all 14 points. If he doesn't, he goes into the court, and the claim is filed against him. And now he's going to turn his head toward the airport itself that allowed this to take place and do the same thing. Then he is going to turn his head toward the actual airline that was on the other end of the people that violated him. And last but not least, he will take each one of those men and individually, because he's already put the clause in there, reserving the right to sue these men and to file a UCC lien against their houses, their property, their cars, their trucks, their boats, silver, gold, their wives as accessories of the fact. All this information is put in there, and it'll be step by step. He's also asking for $200,000 for human rights violations. He's asking for $10,000 for the guest that was told to meet him at the other end in Dallas. He's also asking for an additional $200,000 in damages for pain and suffering. He's also asking for damages for not having his fare returned to him and his baggage money returned to him, and this has all been sent and it'll be done to each one of these entities. What did you think about that?
Okay, now this is what I think about that, and that was a very interesting account of what happened. Can you hear me okay, first of all?
Sure, I hear you loud and clear.
Okay, good. I'd like to say that the only thing that I felt or that I witnessed that needed to be improved is for us as a people to be proactive rather than reactive. And because his first step was not proactive, so it subjected him to become reactive, and he did a good job in being reactive. He did a very, very good job. But we have to understand, as my teacher taught me initially, that it's better to walk into a courtroom or any legal situation with a cannon and realize that you need a slingshot than to go in there with a slingshot and find out that you really need a cannon. So you're supposed to let it all rip from the very, very beginning, and it's supposed to be so potent. If anybody has any accusations to say about my law, because I'm speaking as a sovereign, intelligent, conscious individual, and I'm speaking and I'm coming from the maxims of law, which is the bedrock of logic where all law emanates from, you see. And so when I come like that, I'm challenging anybody, including anything. I don't care who it is, from the micro to the macro. I'm demanding that you either verify my account or you have to send proper citation of authority and memorandum of law in order to overrule my affidavit. And if you cannot do that, then you're going to not only be subjected to the compensatory damages, which is going to be four times what is stated on my act of state, which would be $10 million for each violation, times four for compensatory damages, and times 200 for punitive damages. And the reason why is that the punitive aspect of the crime can be so severe until it must be clear in the minds of anyone that would attempt something as defiling and disgraceful and despicable like that against a true sovereign individual and an individual that is conscious of law and represent law, that this flagship issue would never be tolerated ever again. That's the reason why the punitive aspect of the matter is so severe. It should only be allowed to happen once. And then this way we can begin to offset the disabilities of people, set up a philanthropic foundation where people who have been injured in this regard, you can contact us and bring information to us, and then we will be able to reconstitute you and get you back in the level of stability and structure where you need to be. Because as servants of the people, and we should be servants of the people, we should be mindful of these tricks and these scenarios, and these people be latched into artificial jurisdiction by not even understanding the process of latching, because they don't even understand the process of bifurcation nor hypothecation. They do not understand the procedural aspect of inferior law, not to even mention the supreme aspect of true law. So with all of this unforsaken information that's not being demanded by themselves, because they're not trying to educate themselves, and the authorities put them in a position where they cannot even do it. Because if you spend your time trying to feed your children, trying to manage them, trying to get them through school, trying to keep your job, and you keeping your job almost make you might be subjected to have to give up some portion of your manhood. Now, ain't no who in the world going to buy that. So the thing of it is, we living in a society that is vicious and capable of these type of atrocities. And so when people are subjected to that, when they hear voices like my voice, your voice, or anybody else that's telling it like it really, really is, the people know that there's a chance for them to redeem themselves with honor, and they must know that it is a chance. But the revelators who confused the book and gave us the Septuaginta translation and the Vulgate translation, they made it foregone conclusion that the people were going to be held under the behest of a satanic code and not even realize it, thinking that they worshiping the truth when in reality they worshiping the devil. You see, so we have to be very, very careful of what we are dealing with and how we are dealing. But I can truly, truly tell you that if we take and move forward in solidarity in doing that which is right, in joining that which is right and forbidding that which is wrong, we can overcome the biggest and the biggest and the biggest of adversaries. That's the reason why symbolically we had the body of the lion and the sphinx and the head of us, the head of us. And the reason why, because in our most natural state, we go through the earth purging out evil wherever we find it. We warriors for the Almighty. That's what we do. That's what we do. And that's the reason why the creators raised us up to do it. And we know that we have to do due diligence in order to be effective in doing it. Because other than that, we just an obvious target. But when we working with those divine forces and those primordial vibrations coming from on high, then we can establish the type of leadership that will protect the people.
and the will of the Creator shall be done, because falsehood, faith, was sealed 1,400 years ago. And there's no wiggling up out of this. Babylon is through. Babylon's day is done. This is a new day. The war of Armageddon, whether the people realize it or not, has already been won by the forces of righteousness. And righteousness is going to prevail. As it was in the beginning, so shall it be in the end. I apologize. Here's Ms. Stewart.
Did he answer your question,
Mr. Jarvis? Well, yes, he did. I wanted to go over one more point because I got a copy of what this guy sent, and I want to because he made some strong points, and he mentioned some stuff that is already inserted in this impregnable fortress that this guy have here. The only thing left is enforcement.
I'd like to hear it.
It says United States and state government officials. All United States and state government officials are hereby put on notice that I expect them to have recorded valid oaths of office in accordance with the U.S. Constitution, Article 4. The senators and representatives before mentioned and members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officials, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. I understand that by their oath of office, all U.S. and state government officials are contractually bound by the U.S. Constitution as formulated by its framers, and not as interpreted, subverted, or corrupted by the U.S. Supreme Court or other courts. According to the Ninth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, he goes on to say, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights should not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And the 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the state, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Thus, my understanding from these amendments is that the powers of the U.S. and state government officials are limited to those specifically granted by the U.S. Constitution. I further understand that any laws, statutes, ordinances, regulations, rules, and procedures coronary to the U.S. Constitution as written by its framers are null and void as expressed in the 16th American Jurisprudence, Second Edition, Section 177. The general misconception is that any statute passed by legislators bearing the appearance of law constitutes the law of the land. The U.S. Constitution is the Supreme Court law of the land, and any statute to be valid must be in agreement. It is impossible for both the Constitution and a law violating it to be valid. One must prevail. This is successively stated as follows. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, through having the form and name of the law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since unconstitutionally dates from the time its enactment and not merely from the date of the decision, so barring it. An unconstitutional law is legal contemplation is as inappropriate as it had never been passed. Such a statute leaves the question that it purports to settle just as it would be had the statute not been enacted. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principles follow that it imposes no duties, confers no right, creates no office, bestows no power or authority on anyone, affords no protection, and justifies no acts performed under it. And the final part is, it goes like this. constructive notice of child of God status. Whereas the United States of America is a nation founded upon the belief in the principles of the supremacy of God and the rule of law. And whereas the number two position in that hierarchy is not claimed by anyone. And whereas the government of this nation seem to rely on deception to gain the power to govern. And where is it that I, blank, 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 am desirous to live my life as a child of God? And where is the only power able to claim any authority over me as a child of God? And where is neither the government nor its agents nor its representatives or employees or God or above God? And where is by legally claiming the number two position in the above-mentioned hierarchy, I, blank, 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 occupy a position above all governments and their agents and employees and representatives. Be it known to any and all that on this date, July 11, 2014, that I, so-and-so, a free living, breathing man and a free man on the land, do hereby lawfully claim the status of child of God, and any human being, a person, or official who wishes to claim any authority over me must first provide, prove they exist above God, they are God, they are between me and God, or they have a document upon the face of which can be found the verified signature of God. Failure to first do one of the above mentioned things mean all claims to authority is abandoned or is unlawful. Attempting to exercise any authority over me without first fulfilling one of these four above-mentioned requirements is an unlawful act of fraud and or extortion. And that's the end. That is the, I just want to put a little bit of that.
You know, I love law, and I appreciate that. I love law, and I appreciate that. And I just hope that the people will be taking interest in this, and because they really, really need to know. There's so much for them to have to learn in order to be secure in making this work and become a working reality for them. But people have to get involved. They really, really have to get involved. And get involved for the right reason. You know, birds of the feather should flock together because that's the way we make things better. You see, and we want clean birds. We don't necessarily want jail birds. Not for a person that's been victimized by jail concept, who is really good, because many of the prophets and decent men have been jailed. But we're talking about somebody that's got a jail bird mentality in terms of inferior thinking. We want. Civil-minded people, and when civil-minded people are affected by a jailbird reality, they don't take on that reality. They constantly ascribe to higher values. They look past the deplorable surroundings of their immediate environment and look towards the future, because it takes those type of sacrifices to ingrain and be messaged into the crucibles of our minds so that we shall never forget. That's the reason why it's said that hard trials and tribulations are necessary to establish the truth.
Well, fantastic. Now, what I'm going to look at is I'm going to take a little break because we're going to open up lines in the last hour. We're going to take a look at Homeland Security for a moment. And when we come back,
okay,
then we go up to the lines for questions, okay? Y'all take a little break, get some water. Okay, all right. Y'all hold on, ladies and gentlemen. We will be opening up the lines, okay? Sit tight for a moment, and we'll be right back.
The United States, with entry points at hundreds of airports, harbors, and along a border of more than 100,000 miles, is protected by the Department of Homeland Security, including the Transportation Security Administration, the U.S. Coast Guard, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and Customs and Border Protection, including the Border Patrol. This is Homeland Security, USA. Blaine, Washington. Nearly 7 million people cross here each year from Canada. Its unique location at the intersection of a major interstate freeway and the Pacific Ocean makes it popular with Canadian citizens coming to the United States for work or vacation. Today, Officer Bicker questions an Iraqi national who says he's coming to the U.S. to go shopping.
Is there any U.S. currency?
No.
He's a Canadian citizen. He's born in Iraq, spent most of his life in Iraq. He went to Indonesia about 8 years ago, claimed asylum with Canada. He's lived in Canada for the last 6 years.
So do you have any people that you'd like to meet down here?
No. He didn't have any maps at all of the U.S., no maps of Seattle. He had no shops in mind, and that's just not usual for someone who's going to go shopping on a one-day trip. We're going to have you go back to Canada with all the totality of the circumstances, and, you know, accompanied with gut instinct also, we wanted to just deny his entry into the United States. The procedure I have to do now is an administrative procedure. I was in the middle of trying to get Mr. Hassan sent back to Canada when it was brought to my attention that another individual, born in Iraq, Canadian citizen now, claimed asylum in Indonesia, came across the border probably about 50 minutes after, and just, that's really rare. You don't get that twice in an hour.
He was claiming that he was going down to meet his pickup sister up at the airport coming from Houston.
The two men deny knowing each other.
So we started comparing cell phones for the two individuals and noticed that they'd called each other three times this morning.
And they both know
both
each other?
Both of their phone numbers are in each other's cell phones.
What put these two Iraqi nationals at the same border crossing less than an hour apart? Coincidence or careful planning? At the Isleta port of entry in El Paso, Texas, a pre-primary operation team consisting of a drug detection canine and two CBP officers patrol the lanes of traffic arriving from Mexico.
The canine with a sensitive sense of smell can get into areas that the officer can't see, so it's a great tool. So it allows us to meet our double goal here of keeping traffic moving as well as...
Suddenly, our interview is interrupted. Over in lane one, Darko the canine alerts to an SUV attempting to enter the U.S.
The canines are very well trained, and when they alert, it's almost always a sign that there are drugs there or there were drugs there recently.
What makes this incident even more shocking is that the driver is traveling with his wife and two small children.
It's sad, but they figure they can use the kids. And we may look the other way because they are family.
The SUV is moved into secondary inspection. It appears this family's excursion across the border has taken a disturbing detour.
Your narcotics are in there.
Here at Pittsburgh International Airport, the Transportation Security Administration checks the IDs of more than 5 million outbound travelers each year. It's not every day that the TSA comes face-to-face with an MIT student eager to engineer an unusual experiment.
I read online that there's a law that I don't need to show my ID whenever I go through a security checkpoint, so I wanted to test that today. So right now I'm going to go through and see if I can get through without an ID.
The moment of truth has arrived, and Benjamin is about to put his high-priced MIT education to the test.
No, I'd like to exercise my right. I'm not showing it.
It's a crash course in border security. Will Benjamin pass or fail? Arizona. The Air and Marine Interdiction Team routinely flies support missions with the Border Patrol, searching the rugged Sonoran Desert, a hot spot for illegal immigrants crossing the border. But for one member of this team, tonight's flight is anything but routine. It's Agent Milne's last night here before moving 2,000 miles away to a different branch of Homeland Security.
As of Wednesday, I'm going to be transferring over to the Air and Marine side of the house, and I'll be working with the boat crews out of Florida. Florida is my home. That's where my family is, and I have the opportunity to go there, so I'm definitely taking it.
The darkness provides cover for the illegal immigrants, who often wait until night to make their move. For the Black Hawk crew, this only increases the dangers and challenges to find them.
Our job is to provide air support for primarily federal law enforcement. Right now, our customer tonight is Border Patrol.
The Omaha, it's Tango 260 with GSR, group of 12.
Their first call, 12 illegals spotted in the desert.
We're going to be responding to GSR, ground surveillance radar. And basically a guy in a truck with a... special kind of radar that will pick up movement, and he can use a laser to point them out.
The laser can only be seen with special night vision goggles, part of an arsenal of cutting-edge technology.
All right, I'm pointing the laser right on him.
The Black Hawk's powerful light quickly pinpoints the 12.
Hey, agents working with Omaha. We've got the group left side of the helicopter in the spotlight.
10-4.
Agent on the ground, you got two more behind the big tree to your right, 9 degrees right.
The hardest thing on the ground is probably when you have the helicopter can see everything, and they're trying to tell you to go to a certain spot, but on the ground it doesn't look the same.
To your immediate right, to your immediate right, 10 yards, 5 yards.
When you have light coming down from a helicopter, it creates shadows, so when you see from the helicopter, you'll see people walk by without seeing the people that you're trying to get them to. It gets frustrating in the air, it gets frustrating on the ground, and eventually it works out okay.
The first call ends with the swift apprehension of 12 illegal immigrants, but the next one will put Agent Milne at risk as he must leave the safety of his chopper to help stop a much larger group from escaping. New York. Each year at the JFK International Mail Handling Facility, officers screen more than 22 million packages mailed from around the world. In the war against terrorism, officers are especially on alert. Any package could contain a serious threat to Homeland Security.
We got mail coming from a high-risk country, from Afghanistan. Looks like it might be weapons.
A rifle from Afghanistan. Is this part of a plot to smuggle weapons into the U.S.? At New York's JFK International Mail Handling Facility, a CBP officer has just discovered a suspicious package from Afghanistan.
Looks like it might be weapons. Over here, you have the actual piece, the flintlock, that you would actually pull back to fire off the ball and cap. That one's heavy. You got three weapons in there. A little bit heavier than the rest of them. Probably, it looks like it may be a replica. This really isn't operable. Yeah, so I would say that this is a good representation of a antique. We knew that we had a shipment coming in from the Military Airlift Command out of McGuire Air Force Base. Anytime you have combat zone area, you're going to have a propensity for personnel trying to mail weapons back. The Afghanis make a lot of replicas there, and they sell for like $120, $150 a rifle. Service members get them, and they send them home, you know, to hang on their wall as a memento from being in Afghanistan. It just turned out that today everything we did was actually antiques or replicas, antiques made by the Afghanis. So everything was fine.
Meanwhile, in Blaine, Washington, two Iraqi nationals who tried crossing into the U.S. less than an hour apart claim to be total strangers. Their cell phones tell a different story.
They called each other three times this morning.
And they both know each other?
Both their phone numbers are in each other's cell phones. So.
Yeah.
So at this point, what we're going to do is separate them. We're going to interview both of them, see what story they are going to give us.
What kind of work do you do in Canada?
Barber.
How do you know him?
He come to my shop too.
No, the story is that this guy's his barber, and they've known each other for 8 years.
Why are you finding to meet with your friend? Do you have a specific place?
No, I think it's called
the second person who came through an hour after the first individual. He had problems before entering the United States. He had been refused entry.
Last time he kept me 9 hours. Other time he kept me 8 hours. Okay. So it's really a positive.
His original story was that he was going to pick up his sister who was coming in from Houston. He was hoping it would facilitate his entry.
Right now, no.
He does have the relatives in Houston, but she's not coming.
Do you understand that that's a lie?
The reason why he claimed to not be meeting anybody in Seattle is because he had been refused entry into the United States before. He recommended they take separate cars so that if one of them got hung up, the other one could still come down to go shopping.
We're going to have you have a seat out in the lobby,
mm-hmm.
and just don't talk to your friends out there, okay?
When two individuals are traveling in separate cars, there's a time distance between them, but they're both planning on meeting somewhere.
at the same time in the United States, it shows to me they're trying to hide something.
Back in Pittsburgh, Benjamin, the MIT brainiac, is moving ahead with his own personal game of Are You Smarter Than a TSA Officer?
No, I'd like to exercise my right to not show up. A requirement of an ID is a bit of a gray area with the government and with TSA, so I'd like to know, you know, am I actually allowed to fly without an ID?
Hi, are you the supervisor?
Yes, I am.
TSA?
Can you tell me whether it's legal to fly without showing an ID? Yes. It is legal to fly without showing an ID.
Yes.
Okay.
People get them lost and stolen all the time, right?
Okay. He's trying to use the passenger rights against us. You know, oh, this is what, you know, now you can't make me do any more than this. Yeah, okay.
Well, but I can, you know, it's my right to say no, correct?
Okay, and I have the right to put you in selective screening. You'll get a little extra screening. I think that if you refuse to show an ID, you should certainly be checked. You know, that's a little bit of a red flag.
Yeah, I'm fine with the screening. I have nothing to hide.
So, well then, if you have nothing to hide, why don't you show me your ID?
Arms out.
Thank you.
Well, when somebody wants to come in and not show their ID, it takes like so much time. It causes them probably about an extra 15, 20 minutes. So it just took him like way more time than it should. Now, if somebody would just come in and do what we asked them to do, it would take you 3 minutes to get through your screening, if that.
As we started to screen him, I found his wallet, and as I found his wallet, there was an ID as soon as we opened up the wallet.
Maybe next time I'll hide my ID a little bit better and see if they can find it.
So what exactly have we learned in class today?
You're always suspicious of something that's supposed to be done that doesn't want to be done by an individual who comes in to do what they know is supposed to be done. I guess.
Easy for you to say.
I think we proved that the law is that you don't need an ID to fly a domestic plane.
If you're thinking of trying this at home, don't. There's now a new requirement that states if you don't show a DHS-approved photo ID, you may not be allowed to board. And no, Benjamin's experiment had nothing to do with this change in procedure. Back in the desert skies near Tucson, the Black Hawk crew receives multiple reports of illegal immigrants on the move.
In the Silver Belt area, we have an agent with a bailout. Are you able to go to that area?
You go, yeah. Right.
Let's go.
Omaha Unit, copy Charlie 10-8 on BP West.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. You got Charlie 6 on the ground. They're waiting on a possible 46 backpackers. If you can assist them real quick.
Let's do that first.
Omaha, you're flying right over top of me. I've got two agents on the ground following 8. If you can help them out real quick, you're right in the area.
Man.
Okay, Roger, we'll help you out with that real quick.
Some nights it can be completely quiet, and some nights like tonight, it's one right after another. You have to prioritize which one you're going to go to.
They choose to pursue a large group that has just crossed into the U.S. from Mexico.
Due to the fact that these guys are so close to the border, because when you get out, there's a threat that they would scatter back south. It was my thought, my idea, my decision to go ahead and put them out and keep them running south, getting away. Okay, now.
Agent Milne leaves the chopper and joins the ground search. He now must cope with a new set of dangers, the pitch dark unknown.
Ground agent supporting the Omaha. We dropped off two of our agents, and they're 10-15 just off your nose.
So we landed close to the group. We put our two agents out. They kept them and ended up apprehending them, then waiting for the ground guys, the guys on the ATVs to come up and pick them up.
Yeah, I think we got them on.
Well, I'm always in apprehension mode, but as soon as you make the apprehension and you discover that they're in distress, I mean, I have the ability right then and there to, you know, facilitate IV or call for advanced med direction, whatever I need to do to get these people out of here.
Somebody's wearing reflective shoes down there.
Isn't that nice?
I always love it when they do that.
The count continues to grow as more and more illegal immigrants are apprehended with the Blackhawks air support.
We're thinking about wrapping up the evening right about then, and there's another call from another GSR.
60 plus.
For Agent Milne, this will not only be remembered as his last night, but as one of his biggest nights patrolling the skies. El Paso, Texas. A canine alert on an SUV has landed a young couple and their two small children in a holding area. Officers are about to find out what has alerted the dog.
We were able to look in there and they were able to see a black bundle.
You see right there on top where it says the black pipe?
Looks like it's going to be Mary Jane.
That's how it was covered. And your narcotics are in there. There's your marijuana. And this is where your dog alert was on pre-primary. As you can see by the scratch.
Using their spouse and children as cover to try to get drugs in. That's just despicable.
When we found out that it was a family involved with kids, it really hurts. Of course, they are crying because they really don't understand what is going on. And that is one of the saddest parts of our job.
Usually what they'll do is they'll build up a compartment from the floor down to put more narcotics in.
Smells like marijuana.
It's going to be a very good load. Seems to be the entire floor is loaded.
Officers must now determine how much pot is stashed inside and who packed the vehicle for this family road trip. At the El Paso port of entry, officers have discovered bundles of marijuana hidden inside a secret compartment of an SUV. The only way to remove it? Call in the dismantler.
They're the best at what they do. And that's dismantling vehicles, tearing it apart. They know compartments. They've been doing this for so long. So they have all the appropriate tools to get in here and take it apart. Once we find the trap door or anything, he gives us a heads up that the dope is there. So we're the ones that actually start dealing and handling the dope. They just provide access to the dope for us.
That's a large quantity. If you get this much dope at one time, you're actually hurting the drug dealer. And we are also protecting our country.
Officers have finished searching the SUV and are removing the last of 199 smuggled bundles of marijuana.
What we got here is the final total weight on the seizure. It's 208.4 pounds.
After being interviewed by agents from ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, no charges are brought against the mother, who is released with her two children.
Removing the burdens of debt gives us the freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Montiel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove the burden of debt.
Hi, I'm Tahaka Montiel Bay. There's some very important things that we need to consider when dealing with police stops. First of all, does failure to wear a seat belt constitute a breach of the peace? Is it a public nuisance? Is there an injured party? If a policeman stops you, is he an officer of the law? Has he taken a public oath of office? Is he a public official? Criminal impersonation in the first degree is a felony. In order to exercise your freedom of rights successfully, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Send an email, tahaka53@hotmail.com. During a natural disaster or an economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question.
Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay. For more details, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, Moores, we're back. Area code 402. 402. Tell me who you are and what is your question for our guest. 402, come on in.
Well, it's Princeton calling from Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay, what's your question, Princeton?
I'm losing my voice for the night. So, but I had to ask this
question. Okay, I'm sorry about that. But you muster out a question.
Yeah. I was wondering, the compelling interest in the court, do they hold, they don't hold any compelling interest over your case. I was wondering if you could go into that.
Okay, holding interest over your case. Well, we have to look at it this way. We have to look at this thing as an offer and acceptance and a voluntary compliance situation. But the best advice that I can give anyone dealing with that is, first of all, what have you done to put these people in a position of injury in the event that they roll you? Do you have something already in place that you can enforce? And the next thing is, how can you enforce it? So,
well, I was thinking,
first of all, early brother, he gave us all the scenarios. Brother Muhammad, he gave us all the reasons why they have to deal with the fiction. Okay, you are not a fiction, so therefore you're a man, so how are you going to enforce that? What's your other question?
Well, I was thinking throughout, well, I was saying through an affidavit, you would enforce that. Now, an affidavit could be used publicly and privately, correct?
Well, let me ask you something, because you've called in many, many different times, and the questions that you're asking me, I'm pretty much not understanding them, because I know you've had my information in your hands a long time. What is the information that you've gathered from Black Law? In your opinion, how you think?
Well, I do hear a lot of...
So I'm talking about what you read.
And what I read.
Research.
Well, I know that you can't definitely use a an affidavit of fact privately, but I haven't heard so much of it being used publicly.
Okay, what else you read?
That when you do file an affidavit, when you do file an affidavit, they have to rebut all your points that you put into those affidavits.
Okay, and if you don't do that,
those affidavits stand as true.
Okay, well, what are you going to do about it if they don't, in your opinion?
You can look for, you file for judgment and go for your remedy.
Okay. All right. Well, let me, let's go back over here and I'll open up the line for my guests so that they can get back in here and we can go on down to the bringing in some more clarity to this thing. Thank you, man. Ladies and gentlemen, it appears that my guest has, line is dropped. I'm going to open up and see if they're back in here. Area code 703, y'all still with us now?
Oh, yeah, we here.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Lisa, you have anything? I mean, Shirley, I'm so accustomed to talking to Lisa. Shirley, you have anything else that you want to add about the administrative process and what comes after that affidavit and what you did?
I thought we were going to go into Homeland Security. Talk about Homeland Security.
Okay. We're going to go in there. Tell you what, let's go on in there. Come on in and tell us the rest.
Well, were you going to speak on something on Homeland Security, or did you want me to elaborate on more information on Homeland Security?
I want you to elaborate. Come on.
Okay. Well, basically, with Homeland Security, you know, as we stated, we have them in default. They're in default. They have failed to respond to the commercial affidavit that was mailed out to them back in March. As you know, it's now July, and they have yet to respond. Same thing with Fairfax County. And also, there's another party involved in this, Washington Airport Authority. They're in default. Okay. So, and back to Homeland Security, as I stated, the case has been dismissed. And right now, we're working towards a collateral attack, and now that we have them in default.
Okay.
And
file complaints on all of these people?
Commercial affidavit complaints, yes. On all of them. All of them, yes.
Okay. Now, have y'all put any liens, UCC liens against any of these people's bonds?
I have my priority claim UCC filing in Richmond, Virginia, and so I am a secured party and have a filing UCC filing in Richmond, Virginia. To answer your question, I do have liens against these corporations.
Okay. Now, out of all the things that has transpired, have you exhausted any one of those liens to completion against anybody yet? Is it too early for that yet?
Okay. I'll let my legal counsel take that one, if you don't mind.
Oh, okay.
We're in the second phase of enforcement. There's different levels of enforcement, and the first level is that we should make the three receivers in bankruptcy aware of the situation, so they'll know exactly what's going on. And that would be Jacob J. Liu, the Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of Commerce, I forget her name right offhand, and the Secretary of Transportation, which is Anthony Fox. We make them aware, as well as the financial regulator for the state, you see, because we're coming up under strict foreclosure proceedings, and any material items that we have, we go on to possess them, because remedy, we already called for a writ of execution, either by the sheriff's department or by the marshal's office, you see. And those are part of the conditions. They cannot respond to the opportunity to cure a default. And at that particular point, then they leave themselves in a very, very vulnerable position. And so this is the step that we had. We had the second phase. And and so being in the second phase, we go ahead and initiate the invoice, and then we'll make the state. We'll make the state. The state treasurer aware of the situation, and we'll make John Koskinen, our new secretary, commissioner of the Internal Revenue, and this gives us a chance to attack the trust and where the collateral attack should be at. Primarily on their trust, and as well as their hard assets too. So we're going after everything, and then the third stage would be to close the deal, and that's very, very proprietary information. But I can say one thing, that you know, we're dealing with oligarchies to eat the corporations, and so the only thing that's big enough to digest corporations are the oligarchies. So that's where we at with that.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Now, when it comes to, we're going to say that you guys get a victory against one of them, and the judge ordered them to pay you. Could you lay out for me the strategy that you would use to actually get that done immediately? If the judge ordered them to pay, you went against Homeland Security, you won a $60 million judgment, and so what strategy would you use to collect immediately?
Well, first of all, what we do is we'll register it with the Security Exchange Commission, so that places a tracer flag on it, and then we got a proprietary interest that we dealing with. And when I say proprietary, you can understand that, because this is up under such a critical situation. It comes up under non-circumvent and non-disclosure. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you loud and clear. Yes, I hear you. Hello? 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 Appears that so their call has dropped again, and they will be coming back in. You all stick with us for a second, and we're going to bring them back in, okay? Okay, let Eddie come back in right now. All right. Here goes 703. You back with us?
Yes, we back with you. All right?
Okay. Tell him he can continue. We're listening.
Okay, yes, sir. Now, as I was saying, this stage here is proprietary. And it has to be esoterical, because it's a lot at stake here. But the bottom line is that that would be the third and final leg, and so we have all of the support that we need locally, nationally, and internationally, and we use the Erie Doctrine to go after the assets in various other places when the corporate office may not be here, where the attack has taken place in the political subdivision. We use the Erie Doctrine to go after their hard assets and wherever they may be, even if they're in international territories, because they still come up under the CITRAL Convention and the Hague Convention. And so because of that, then we got access to these individuals, no matter where they try to go, we got access. So, therefore, it's not going to be no problem with the debt, moving the debt and getting the benefits from the debt. It's not going to be no problem. It's not going to be no problem
okay.
at all.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, Shirley, have you used the blast information? Have you, what part have you put the media on notice about?
Well, actually, we just started to deal with the media for radio interview. We had an interview on Saturday, July the 12th, with a gentleman by the name of Jimmy Pratt. He's probably on the call as well. And he is he has a show every Saturday, WJRM, and he's out of North Carolina. So he interviewed us. As a matter of fact, Mr. Tahaga, that's some of the information I sent you on that interview. And then to answer your question about the blast, I do have a copy of it. I printed it off, which you have in your library, and that's going to be the next thing that I'm going to be doing is putting them on blast through the different media that you have on your list and other media people as well. I got some people in California that I'm talking to. Matter of fact, let me just say this. Dr. Muhammad and I, what we were focused on was getting them in default. And that's where we are. We got them in default. I mean, it's been a lot of work. We're working together as a team, and there's not a lot of people involved. It's a lot of work here. And keep in mind, I don't have just one incident. I got, three going, and it's all concerted acts that was against a war on one woman. So, you know, I have to keep my focus, and my focus was to get them in default, and that's where we are now. Now it's to expose these criminals and bring them to justice.
Okay. All right. Put them on blast. Because that is the most effective weapon that you can use. Every major, because see, especially the newspapers and magazines, they love for something to talk about. And with what you got going, you can draft that baby up real good. Count how many people you want to send it to this week. Make them many copies. Put it in a nice envelope and address it to each with a cover letter to each one of them, letting them know where you at, what has transpired, and what's about to happen. And I guarantee you, they'll run the story. And word of mouth travel. And don't be surprised is before you get ready to contact radio and television, they're already contacting you. So once you expose you, when you caught on the light, you know, I don't think no black people in America got roaches, but if those who might have had some, when you caught on the light, you see all of run the light on. So try some of that and see what happens.
Tahaga, can I say something? I also want to add, too, now we also sent the affidavit to the Attorney General in Virginia and the governor. We have a new governor now. So we sent it to the former governor because this happened in 2013, and we sent it to the new governor. And they all have not responded. As a matter of fact, they're all in default at this point.
Well, the thing is, see, we're dealing with a criminal empire. See, you don't go to the fox to complain about the wolf. Don't go to the fox to complain about the wolf. Both of them eating chickens. So you go put them on black, put the whole thing on blast, and you look for people who stand to gain based on what you're giving to them, and they'll give you a seat, they'll give you a microphone and a a soapbox, and you just tell that truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Well, the reason I'm saying that is because that's what the brother who did this affidavit up that I was reading out, what he did was he gathered every radio, television, and magazine, major radio, television, magazine, every major news broadcast, every major talk show, including 60 Minutes, and he stand poised just like a king cobra to strike in the event of the first default. Then he will unleash this thing to these people with a cover letter explaining every intricate details of what did and what happened, ain't happened, and who you know what is in the vice and on the burner. And he's guaranteed an audience, and he can start singing like the Temptations. And I guarantee you, when that get out there, then we got a very serious problem. Y'all hold on a moment. I'm going to open up some phone lines and see if these folks got a question. You got something to say, sister, before we go?
Tahaka?
Okay. Yeah, I'm listening.
Oh, I was wondering, did we have any more callers?
Yeah, we got some more. I'm going to have them call in and see what their questions are to you and
okay,
my guest, Brother Muhammad. All right, hold on a moment. Area code 910. If you have a question for our guest, tell me who you are and let us have your question so our guest can answer the question. 910.
Well, my name is Jimmy Pratt. I was calling just to say hello to Shirley. And one of the, I had a question about one of the comments about going to the press, and you had mentioned that you don't go to, in reference to getting help, you had mentioned you don't go to the fox to get help for the wolf or something like that, you said. Well, and from what my experience has been, you don't go, I mean, the press, the American press itself has been complicit with this whole thing with Shirley. I mean, with all of this sort of thing. I don't think anything could have happened to her like that in the middle of D.C., and the only person that reports it is the local neighborhood watch program. To me, that's smacks of. I don't think the federal government or the Homeland Security or any of them would have moved unless they know something like that was going to be kept quiet. I looked at the Shirley's documents today.
Yeah,
and I look at and I know the story, and I'm saying this could not have happened unless somebody in the national press, they would post the USA Today, the Times, unless they agree, they're not going to cover this. I just believe that, and from my own personal experience, I believe it. And I think you think otherwise that. They will cover these stories. Am I correct?
Well,
this particular story.
Not necessarily, because, see, my thing is this right here. No evidence, no case. I learned how to do something a long time ago. I think I was pretty much born with it. And I ran up on the sheriff here in this town. I wanted to exercise my freedom of right to travel. And so I sent him my affidavit. He didn't respond. But what happened was he ran across town and got a lawyer. And the lawyer sent me a letter on behalf of helping the sheriff. So what I did was I took the lawyer and did the same thing to the lawyer that I did to the sheriff. I didn't hear no more from them, and the next thing I know, I was all right. I never had to – I sent the blast letter. I didn't send the blast letter to the sheriff, but I sent it to the lawyer for exposure because they stood to gain. Then in another situation, I pretty much done the same thing. See, I'm not looking at whether or not the media going to broadcast my story or whatever, but I look at who would stand to gain if I gave them this particular information, because the way I see things is it doesn't matter to me how many people get involved. It's just like, I don't know if you are familiar with certain types of snakes. For instance, you're coming down the Amazon River, and a green mamba jumps, leaps out the creek and get on the boat. He going to try to kill everybody in the boat. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the strategy.
Tahaka?
Hey, baby.
Tahaka?
Yeah?
Tahaka, can I say, Shirley, can I say something?
Sure.
Yes, what I wanted to, make sure on the record here that my life is still in danger with this whole concerted act of Homeland Gang and Fairfax County and the other ones that I mentioned earlier in my story. Now, that dismissal was without prejudice. They call so that what they're continuously to do is maliciously prosecute me, even though the case has been dismissed.
Go ahead, I understand. Somebody got a lot of background noise there.
Not on our end. I hear it too, but that's not on
my
end.
Oh, that might be.
Okay, go ahead. I hear you now.
You want me to repeat it?
No, we got it. But
okay,
I understand,
great.
But go ahead.
Well, no, that I just wanted to get that in, that I'm continuing to be maliciously prosecuted by the Federal Eastern District Court here in Alexandria, the prosecutors for the Eastern District here.
Damn.
Because, of course, you know, they representing the Homeland Gang.
Right.
And I'd like to refer to it more specifically as the Homeland Security Game, Homeland Security Game, because that's what they act like. I mean, they came up here, you know, and the way that they came, I mean, it was so vicious and so ferocious until it didn't even make any sense. And but nothing makes sense in the way that they do things. And look at the young lady who came here with her baby, how she was maliciously destroyed here in D.C. I mean, hitting her 17 times in the head with bullets, you know, and her child sitting inside the car. You know, so, I mean, you know, these people playing helter-skelter, and, I mean, when they have situations like this, what are they going to do? I mean, they know they don't have no case, and they know this thing is getting more and more exposure. These people, they running scared because, I mean, it's like they can't find a way to justify this. They try to make these outlandish moves, but it's not working, you see, because as quick as they can tie the knots, then they got somebody out here that's untying the knots quicker than they can tie them, you see. So the thing is that I mean, they desperate now. They're very desperate because they out there on Front Street. They don't have nothing to back it up. And it's not like they dealing with a Trayvon Martin case. You're dealing with people who understand that your presumption of judgment is wrong because it's predicated up on a fraud, and then it's also predicated up on non-disclosure, and it's also predicated on an invalid contract, because when the corporation signed off on any contract regarding the flesh and blood, Ms. Stewart, that was an illegal contract. It was not a bilateral contract. It was a unilateral contract. So in taking all of these things in consideration and looking at all of these clear arguments that's coming to them face-to-face, that does not leave them room for no denial, because you're dealing with maxims of truth. And when we bring these maxims against them, as an agency, they can't deal with it. They can't contend with it. They can't contend with it. And then the constitutional language reinforces everything that we're doing. So they are really, really desperate. They got to make this situation go away. So I would just suggest to them, since they're already listening to us with the Echelon satellite system, we might as well just let them know now we're willing to give you an opportunity to cure. And so just take the opportunity to cure, you see, and then just, you know, swallow your pride, take the opportunity to cure, and then everybody can leave away from this with some resolution. So, you know, that's the bottom line right there.
All right. Well, I got another caller with his hand raised. I'm going to go ahead and I'll open it up.
All right.
All right. Hold on one second.
All right.
Area code 412. Do you have a question for our guest? 412.
My name is Lisa. Hi, Tark. Hi, guest. I have a question. It's a little off the cusp, just a little bit, but it has to deal with the state penitentiary. I have a friend that was in the state penitentiary, diabetic. They would not give him his proper medication, and he developed an infection in his toe. And the infection got so bad while he was locked up that they had to cut his toe off. And he wants to sue the state penitentiary system, but no lawyer will take the case. So does anybody have any suggestions?
Tahaka doesn't mind, you can take my number. We can talk and show you how this has to be done, because none of the members of the Bar Association are going to give you the type of help that you need. Matter of fact, they're here to suppress your rights. And right. I'm saying this publicly, and I mean it publicly. I'm not biting my tongue. There's a war going on called the Cause Debendi against the people of the United States of America. And the main conspirators behind this is the Bar Association, which was formed by Simeon Baldwin and Francis Crawley, I believe. Those are the two individuals that initially formed the Bar Association, as we know it today, the British Accredited Registry. You see, and it has achieved a lot in undermining our government, because now the Bar Association basically controls the judicial branch of our government. We only got three branches: the executive, the judicial branch has been captured by the Bar Association, and that's because individuals that have gained prominence and power within our system has ceded that authority over to them, and this has got to be circumvented. This has got to be stopped. In Virginia now, you have three judges at the height of the corporation controlling and censoring documents, when no judge or no attorney or no lawyer is supposed to be practicing law behind these agencies like that. But these lawyers come in and violate the Separation of Powers Act and taking control. They control the title companies. They third-party debt collectors. So you're right, you can't get no help from them. But you can get some help from my constituency. So if you got a pen, I'll give you my number, or I can leave it with Tahaka, and he can give it to you later. Because I only want the number to be for people who are actually concerned. And if anybody calls that has a genuine concern, then I don't mind leaving my number so that they can contact me.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, you have another question, Lisa?
No, I just wanted to ask about that, because, you know, I know it's a government agency, even though some of them are privatized, but I know what they did is illegal, let alone immoral, and they don't have any problem with it. So, you know, he deserves something.
I tell you this, is that we can certainly non-proton, which means retroactive back to the very beginning where the injustice was done, we can correct that. We can correct that, and we can actually free him. We can correct that, and we can free him.
He's out now. He's out now.
Oh, okay.
He's been trying he's out now. He's been trying to seek a lawyer since he's been out, and they all just keep turning him down.
Okay, one of the things that's got to be done now, I'll leave the number with Tahar.
Okay.
And
you can
contact me, Muhammad Rashid, and then I can be able to assist you in that matter. And
Okay.
All right, Lisa.
Thank you.
Well, we're gonna get that information to you. Let me go down here to the next caller here. Area code 443. Do you have a question for our guest? 443.
I have a question as well as I'd like to offer a comment.
You're only interested in your question. What's your question, brother?
Okay. I'll stay within that guideline, respectfully. Has anyone discussed the 111th Congress House Resolution 4405? It has a great impact on some of the things that I've heard on this conversation this evening, in addition to House Resolution 2560 in the House of Representatives. And I think one of the most impacting things, if anyone has research or heard of the Omni Law that's in place right now that deals with the writ of certiorari, which addresses the sovereign sequester default amendment. That's
okay,
in
the
place
first
now.
One you mentioned, what was the first one you mentioned?
House Resolution 4405 in the 111th Congress.
And the third one?
The very third one that I mentioned, it's the Omni Law, OMNI-LAW.
Okay, let me get my guest to answer that. Brother Muhammad, what you got on those three?
To you, sir. Is the Omni Law you were speaking in regards to, is this connected with the Omnibus Law?
Did you hear the first one?
Well, that was House Term Resolution. What was that again?
Okay, hold up. Let me get him to answer these right here again. These questions again.
Okay.
443, what was the first one? We're going to take them one at a time. What's the first one?
Yes, I'll be more than glad to reintroduce those. The first one is the 111th Congress.
All right,
first
hold on.
Session, House Resolution.
The first one is, say it again.
H.R. 4405.
Restate it again.
Okay.
111th Congress, House Joint Resolution
445. First session, House Resolution 4405.
Okay.
In the House of Representatives, that's the very first one.
Okay.
The second one would be the 111th Congress, first session, House Resolution 2560. I'm a researcher, so that's what I'm saying. Listen to your call this evening. These will heavily impact because they are already in place, and they are law.
Okay. I like to look these up, and unfortunately, I don't have the system right now that where I can have it done right now on the spot as I speak to you, but I'm going to look those up and see exactly what it is referencing in regards to this, to the things that we have said, and I'll...
If you want to share an email address, I'll send them to you.
Okay, would you please?
If you want to share your email address, I'll be more than glad to, sir.
Okay, well, we're gonna get all that information read to you, okay, brother?
That'll be fine.
Okay, look, send it. James, send it to her. She's going to give you the email address.
We're going to get it from you. We'll get it. Hold on 1 second. Let me go to the next. Area code 910. 910.
I've already spoken. I'm just listening.
Okay. All right. Now, Brother Muhammad, now.
Yes, sir.
What do you think, in your opinion, about because I don't know, maybe I view cutting on the light or shining light on situations from a different perspective, because I know that the media is controlled by certain factions and this, that, and the other, and all that stuff. Yeah, but. From some, I guess, it's some unknown, canny spiritual aspect, I guess, I use that thing very effectively, and I force stuff to happen, and I do things without a whole lot of sweat, and I get things done. And I've been using the same tactics ever since I was born into this world. And it's always been the same result. I've always succeeded using it. But what do you think about exposing this situation that you guys got going to certain media aspects and shining a light on this thing and forcing them to expose this? What do you think about that?
Well, I believe like this. I believe that if we as intelligent men and women do not have a cause for which we are willing to live for and a cause that we are willing to fight for physically, mentally, and spiritually, then we're not really worth the salt that is in our bread. And so, therefore, I believe that all men and all women have to rise to the occasion whenever we have to. This is the spirit prophets. This is the spirit of those people that follow the prophets. This is the spirit of those people who are true revolutionaries in a intelligent sense of the word, to the extent that we will do whatever is necessary to maintain the right. And this is not a personal right that is singled out in the minds of an individual. This is a divine right that protects the rights of all the people. And I'm an individual. I'm for all the people, even though I believe charity begins at home and spreads abroad. I believe that my contribution to this world would be to fight oppression any and everywhere that it may be found, whether it's physical oppression, whether it's mental oppression, whether it's oppression in any form. Oppression is oppression, and people should have the right to live and enjoy their lives and live their lives to the best and the fullest of their ability. And this can only be done as was depicted by a good friend of mine, Gilbert Young out of Cincinnati. He was the one that drew the picture of a hand reaching down and saying, "Each brother reach back and teach one." And that was Gilbert Young out of Cincinnati, the artist, a good friend of mine, that did that drawing. And I believe that this is the way that we should be to offset these terrible disabilities that we're dealing with. We're dealing with the political subdivisions, the utility companies, and all of these agencies of the political subdivision, whether they're in enforcement or not. They still work in a conspiring a fashion to violate our rights, and it's like the tail wagging the lion instead of the lion wagging the tail. It's not natural for the tail to wag the lion. And so this is what has taken place. The tail is wagging the lion. And so we got to revert that stop. And the only way that that is going to stop is that we have to take our dependency off of these situations and quit letting these people who's cloaking themselves into priestcraft positions to make people feel that they do not have the wherewithal to accomplish this. So sit back and let us do the thinking for you. No, we can't tolerate that. That cannot be. You see, because the mind is a muscle, and the muscle needs exercise. And the only way the muscle can get exercised is when we do due diligence with our mind and quit settling for these half answers, these partial answers. We need legitimate thoughts and legitimate answers to the things that we're concerned about. We shouldn't settle for anything less. So therefore, we should do due diligence on all things, especially things that are essential to us and important for our well-being and our survival. So as I said earlier, we cannot afford to make critical leaps to judgment. We have to be aware. We have to be concerned. We have to have the ability to do, just like James said, he does extensive researching, and I respect him for that. I do also extensive researching, and this is what we have to do. We must do this. We must take this responsibility. And so, and this is the only way that we can represent ourselves properly and effectively to the people that genuinely need our help and need our support in order to affect the change in their lives. But they have to be willing to make a sacrifice too, to make the sacrifice to give up that which is unnecessary and frivolous for that which is more stabilizing and rewarding. So we have to give our lower desires and our improper desires, you know, forsake them so that we can establish more of a traditional essence and constitution that is consistent with an individual that cares about himself, cares about his loved ones, cares about his society, cares about people, and wants to make a contribution to make this a better place for all people to be. You see, so all people can come together and develop a bigger and broader mindset that's placed on humane concerns rather than individual concerns. It should be about what we can do for our community, what we can do for our city, what we can do for our state, what we can do for our country. You see, it should be a big commitment.
Well,
like
well,
that.
Well, let me ask you this question. Now, when it comes to the media, should we use that as a tool to expose these people?
I think it would be a miscarriage of our energies to not to use the media, even though Thomas Jefferson warned us that the media has become an enemy against can find some media sources out there that will stand up for the right thing. It may be sparse, but they're there. And whatever opportunity that is available through the media, being we willing to step to that and accept that and utilize that, because one thing is for certain, when people hear clear words and they don't have to deal with ambiguous language and plausible language and legalese language, they may know then that they're dealing with more direct understanding as far as comprehension and awareness is concerned. And these other languages that the spinsters use is just designed to keep people in darkness, keep them involved in a state of vacillating without going forward or without going backwards, just moving but not forward or backwards, just vacillating in one spot, so to speak. So we have to be moving forward. We have to be productive. And the best way to do that is to take ourselves out of this state of independence. We need to quit depending on people for this, people for that, people, we need to supply our own needs. We need to be making our own soaps. We need to be making our own fabrics. We need to be doing all of the things that is essential to our well-being. We need to mandate these responsibilities ourselves. We need to teach our children to be physicists, because if we teach our children to be physicists, that's the master science, and it's nothing that we cannot do when we got that level and that caliber of mindset amongst our people. You see, so we have to take all of these avenues and employ them so that we can free ourselves, because then and only then can we take our place in the sun of civilization with all the other civilized people of the world. So this is what we have to do. And so we were at a disadvantage historically in many, many ways, which is not necessary to talk about that at this point. But needless to say, we need to really, really apply ourselves and to do the due diligence that's necessary to establish our independence and move forward. And these people that want to rob us and deny us our equal rights, we should not allow them to do it. We should let them know that we will not never allow this. We will not allow you to tolerate abusing us. We will keep living on. And that's it, bottom line.
You're exactly right. For those of you who listen to the broadcast, what we have going here is, in my opinion, is of such sensitive nature. Those of you who would like to contact Sister Shirley Ann Stewart and Brother Muhammad Rashid, send me an email address, and we'll connect you. I do not want them to put this information out on this broadcast. We want to filter this thing, and then we will get that over there off the grid. And I'll get that to you. So send me an email to tahaka53@hotmail.com and just say I want to contact your guest that you had on your broadcast last night. And we'll get you in touch with them, okay? And Sister Shirley, I certainly appreciate you coming on, telling us your story and telling us what happened. And Brother Muhammad Rashid, I appreciate you standing behind the sister. And I'm certainly glad to find out about what's happening so I can get in it. I always liked this Vernon Johns, the man that came before Martin Luther King. He said, you see a good fight, get in it. And I'm one of them old chips on the block. Y'all got to excuse me. I've been fighting all my life. I love it. I hate war, but
I appreciate you.
Good at it.
May the Creator bless you to keep up the good work.
All right. I thank you all for calling in. And but keep in mind, tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's T-A-R-K-A 53@hotmail.com. T-A-R-H-A-K-A 53@hotmail.com. And we'll get you in touch with my guest, so that you can speak with them and you can exchange information and all of that good stuff. We're coming down to the close of the broadcast, and this, in my opinion, has been a very informative broadcast, and I look to have them back on again in the future. Okay? So y'all make sure that y'all stay with us. Also, stay tuned for coming broadcasts that we're going to have here as well.
During a natural disaster and economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Emmanuel Bay, for more details. Area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amana El Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard.